Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Detective Ridiculous, where we talk about the only thing more terrifying than Warhammer, real life. And I would love to give a wonderful shout out to the very sweet little lady that went to my meetup at PAX that specifically said, I am not a Warhammer fan. I am very much a Detective Ridiculous fan.
Aww.
And really... really loves the dynamic of DK telling the stories. This is actually real. I'm not kidding.
Aw, that's so, so sweet.
She was so sweet. It was amazing. I wanted to shout them out.
Shout out.
So thank you. Thank you for coming around during that. But also to all of our listeners and viewers, if you enjoyed this podcast, check out patreon.com/AdeptusRidiculous, where you can get posters, bloopers, and Discord access, including the brand new DB Cooper poster. The parachute is not open yet. Will it open? Who knows? Find out on the next episode of Dragon Ball Z. And you can purchase that down in the description at orchid8.com.
You made an anime reference. The world is healing.
It's like it's mainstream enough, you know?
That's true. Dragon Ball Z is mainstream enough. Rest in peace, Akira Toriyama.
Yeah, that hit like a truck. Even I was like, God damn.
Yeah, man, the amount of projects he's been a part of is insane.
I was particularly rough because you know, down here, you know, we both live in SoCal, and Dragon Ball Z and in like the Mexican Hispanic community is giant.
Oh yeah, it is among like every race and creed. Everybody knows to some degree and loves Dragon Ball Z.
Well, besides me, because you know,
even you love Dragon Ball Z. Don't tell me you don't like at least Android 18.
Character equals hot is very different. I see
you like Dragon Ball Z. Confirmed. See? All evidence right there.
You know what, DK? I'm leaving.
Mr. Electric, you know what to do. He left. I think, is that all I had to do? Was tell him that he loves Dragon Ball Z? Sweet! Oh, let's go. This is going to be a great episode today, everybody, of Detective Ridiculous.
DK, I'm in your walls.
Whoa!
I don't have like the frying pan sound effect. I wish I did.
Oh, okay. Well, so Bricky's back. Hi, Bricky.
Hi, I'm back. I went to DK's house and hit him with a frying pan and then left.
Yeah, because I had the gall to say that he likes Dragon Ball Z because mm-hmm, Android mm-hmm. 18 is hot. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Shy, play the pan smack. All right. What's the episode about?
So, last episode of Detective Ridiculous, we had kind of a wild one that was like full of speculation and theories, and no one knows what happened to Little Lindy really, or who kidnapped Little. But today's episode, there will be none of that because it's not a mystery. We know what happened and we know why it happened, but it's still just this absolutely wild scenario that needs to be talked about regardless.
Okay. So there's no, we don't have issue with speculation. We're not testing theories. We know it's just like a crazy, crazy story.
Yes, sir. Yes,
all right,
sir.
All right.
Yes, sir. So without further ado, today we are going to be talking about Federal Express Flight 705.
Ah. I thought we were going to talk about the Malaysian flight, and I'm like, that's definitely something we have no idea. What is happening there?
Oh, we'll talk about what's happening there, because that is actually, we'll talk about it. Don't worry, we'll talk about it. We'll talk about it.
Denzel Washington in Flight is having a time again.
So we're going back to April 7th, 1994. There is a Federal Express cargo plane, Express Flight 705. It's a DC-10 plane that is getting ready to start its journey from Memphis, Tennessee, into San Jose, California. The flight crew consisted of Captain David Sanders, age 49, First Officer James Tucker Jr., age 42, and their flight engineer, Andrew Andy Peterson, aged 39. There was also a fourth passenger named Auburn Calloway. He was a 42-year-old Federal Express employee that was deadheading on this flight. And deadheading is kind of like when you hitch a ride for free on a company plane for various reasons. Either, you know, you really need to be somewhere to fly another one of their planes, or I think he claimed he had like a family emergency. Oh, it's really important that I get back to San Jose because there's just some really important family stuff, and I'm gonna hitch a ride on this cargo plane, which is completely normal thing, not out of the ordinary.
Can I back us up for a moment? And this is going to be a question that I think is gonna sound incredibly stupid. Don't say anything. I know you had a retort like primed. It would sound incredibly stupid, but I think it's also a question that other viewers will also want to ask.
Okay.
And not ask because they think it'll be too stupid.
Okay.
Federal Express is FedEx, correct?
Yes, that is yes. That is basically FedEx.
Sure. It is FedEx. Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. Mm-hmm. I heard you say Federal Express. I put it together, but I was thinking for a moment, like, you know, there might be a chance that I'm wrong.
It's entirely possible. You know, that was not as stupid as a question as I was expecting. I thought you were going to be like, so airplane, is this in the sky? You know, like it wasn't as, you know.
Yeah. I'm just thinking specifically because, you know, I'm going to get like a comment. It's like, Bricky, you idiot. Of course, it's FedEx. And then I'm going to imagine we're going to have like a viewer from like South America who doesn't really understand American stuff and be like, yeah, I didn't know either. I'm glad to clear that up.
That's fair. That's fair.
So,
sure.
I'm a man of the people.
Yeah, Shai said it's like DC Comics. The name doesn't make a whole lot of sense because it's, you know, Detective Comics comics. You know, like, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but, you know, it is what it is.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
It's like ripping pieces.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's more of a meme thing. That's true, right? Yeah, like
anyway.
SMH my head, right?
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah. So, again, there's only four people on this plane, because this is specifically a cargo plane that is just carrying, I think it's electric parts. So, no other passengers or anything on this flight. They are just, you know, hauling some electric parts from Memphis to San Jose. So the pre-flight checks are going well. You know, they're all getting acquainted with each other, and Auburn Calloway is introducing himself to everyone, letting him know, hey guys, I'm just kind of here for the ride. You know, I gotta hitch a ride to San Jose, so I'm deadheading. He has a carry-on with him. It's this guitar case that he stows, and, you know, everybody's just kind of chilling and concentrating on making sure everything is good for the flight. The only thing that they see that seems out of sorts is that the flight engineer, Andy Peterson, notices that the cockpit voice recorder has been turned off. So he's like, wow, that's weird, and flips it back on. Okay, let's go back to flight checks. And at some point, he has to leave the cockpit, check on some stuff, and then he comes back into the cockpit, and he's like, huh, that cockpit voice recorder's off again. That's really, really weird. So
that's
just
a little sus.
Yeah, he pops that thing back in. He's like, okay, well, that is weird, and I need to keep an eye on that, because if the CVR malfunctions, that's a flight no-go. You cannot take off if your cockpit voice recorder is not functioning right, because as the name suggests, it records the happenings in the cockpit in 30-minute intervals, so that if something happens on the plane, you just review the CVR and figure out what went wrong.
I wonder, wait, was his co-pilot in there at the time, and he was like, hey man, yeah. why is this shutting off?
I don't think he brought it up to anybody. I think he just saw it and he was like, I'm just going to keep an eye on that and see if maybe, because maybe it was malfunctioning, maybe it just popped out again or whatever, but I'm going to keep an eye on it.
A bit of strange thing not to mention that when it's been twice, you know, like two times.
Yeah.
You know, okay, you know, fair when one blinky light, I don't know. I mean, like I say when one blinky light is off, it should be, you know, that, et cetera, but I mean, they're trained for this, so I don't know.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, the CVR isn't a blinking light. If you look at the picture above the one she put, it's like this knob that when it's off, it sticks out, and then you gotta push it back in.
That's true. It's true.
So not technically a light, but you got the idea. It's the same thing, really. But other than that, everything is pretty standard. Everything checks out. There's no red flags, and they get underway. And it is an absolutely crystal clear, perfect day. Weather, super ideal for flying. Clear blue skies, not too many clouds, just perfect conditions for flying. So, about 30 or so minutes into the flight, the flight engineer, Andy Peterson, noticed that Auburn Calloway is stepping into the cockpit. Kind of, he sees him out of the corner of his eye, and he's like, oh, hey, it's Auburn. He's probably, you know, he's also a flight engineer and a pilot, and, you know, he's probably getting a little bored because we have kind of a long flight ahead of us. He probably just wants to have, like, a little bit of a casual conversation with the crew, you know? He probably wants to get to know us and everything. And then Auburn Calloway blasts him in the head with a hammer.
Oh. Oh.
Yeah.
Wait, what?
Auburn Calloway just blasts him over the head with a hammer.
Okay. I gotta get angry at you for a second here.
Okay.
You using the phrase blasts him and then with a, the last thing I thought you were going to say was hammer. I expected shotgun, handgun, no. gun, something, not hammer.
Yeah, he essentially came in dual-wielding hammers.
What a baller.
Boom! He smacks, he smacks Andy Peterson, and then boom! He hits the first officer gets just waylaid with a hammer, and the captain gets attacked too. And honestly, First Officer James Tucker was struck so hard that he described it as like he didn't lose consciousness, but he lost what he calls useful consciousness, in the sense that he was like aware of his surroundings, but he couldn't do anything. His head just like, kind of
like concussed, so to speak.
Yeah, he just kind of slumps back in his chair, and he is just, the lights are on, but nobody's home for like a full minute. He gets hit so hard. There are, like, his skull is fractured, and there are now bone chips stuck in his brain.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Well, he's able to like, state this later, though, so he clearly lives.
Mm-hmm.
But, oh my God.
Yeah, he got hit hard. And Peterson, the flight engineer, actually has a temporal artery severed. So he's in real bad shape, and that's only going to get worse.
Okay. Which did two people beat the hell out of them, or was the one guy?
It's just the one guy that was deadheading. Auburn Calloway is the attacker.
You said there was four people or three people on the plane?
Including Auburn Calloway, there's four. So there is the captain, Dave Sanders. There's the first officer, James Tucker Jr., the flight engineer, Andrew Peterson, and then Auburn Calloway is the deadheader.
So I'm sorry, names always. So which of the three, which two of the three got bopped?
All of them.
Oh, they all got bopped.
They all get bopped.
Oh,
all
God.
Because Calloway took them by surprise.
Yeah, but like,
none of them were expecting Calloway to just come out of nowhere and just boom. Because he had these weapons stored in his guitar case that he brought on. One is suspecting that.
It's just the simple concept of, like, you know, you don't normally, someone who's able to bang out three separate unconscious people with a weapon, is that's a movie thing, you know? Like, I feel like that's not something I imagine the guy going in like John Wick, just like blah, 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 and just breaking down three people. It's kind of crazy.
What's crazy is that Peterson and the captain are not unconscious. At this point, they all got struck and they're all not in a good way, but they're not unconscious. The first officer is the only one that's just like slumped back and like, oh God, where am I? I can't move. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Because even though Peterson and the captain got struck real hard, they're both aware enough to be like, okay, I gotta unstrap and we gotta go after this guy because, whoa, what the f- just happened? Like, they are getting up out of their seats still, which is kind of crazy. But I guess now it should be mentioned that I think everyone on the crew except Peterson were former service people. Like the captain and the first officer combined had over 10 plus years in the Navy. But Auburn Calloway is also a former Navy pilot and a martial arts expert. So you can imagine he came in swinging like a storm.
Okay.
But anyway, so the captain and flight engineer, like I said, somehow after getting struck with hammers and a severed temporal artery, they're like kind of getting out of their seats like, okay, we got to get Calloway. Problem is, Calloway had exited the cockpit and he comes back in, this time not with a hammer, but with a goddamn spear gun.
You like for fishing?
Yes, he comes in with a spear gun.
Is Calloway like some kind of MacGyver plane jacker?
We'll talk about it. So he's waving this spear gun around. And he's like, hey, I will kill you, you know, and like, oh, get back in your seat. I'm going to tell you what. Hey, you know, but Peterson is kind of off to the side. And so he's got like he sees the barrel of this spear gun coming through the door, and he goes into like just uber Chad mode, and he grabs the spear tip because like the spear tip protrudes out of the gun like 4 inches or so. So he grabs that, and he's trying to like wrestle it out of Calloway's hands. And while they're struggling, the captain, Dave Sanders, he jumps into the fray and they both start trying to wrestle the spear gun out of Calloway's hands. And it turns into this huge brawl where Peterson and Sanders are trying their damnedest to somehow subdue Calloway, who naturally has the upper hand on them since he doesn't have any injuries. And those right. two...
He didn't get smashed in the head with a hammer.
Yeah.
These guys are badasses. They see the guy with the spear gun and they're like, bet?
Yeah, it's crazy that they're able to do this.
Okay.
So, First Officer James Tucker is coming to and he's like, whoa, I got to fly the plane because those two are trying to subdue Cal. Someone's got to fly the plane. And he kind of realizes, and he says this in an interview, he's like, well, at that point, I was like, whoa, I have the best weapon in my hands right now. It's the plane.
Oh, please tell me he just, like, yanked it sideways.
He starts pulling these kind of crazy maneuvers because he was a fighter pilot in the Navy.
Oh, my God.
He starts this immediate 15-degree climb that just knocks everyone on their ass. Then he starts making like these super hard banks left and right, and they throw Calloway and the crew up against the walls, and they're fighting while they're stuck against the wall. They're kind of like trying to wrestle the spear gun out of his hands. They're grabbing for the hammers that are rolling around, and
okay,
he's trying.
Shai. This is not related to the episode. Shai, please, during this period of time, please use the trailer footage of Modern Warfare 3 in 2011, where they're flying around in zero G in the cockpit of a plane. You know what I'm talking about. That's all I'm asking for. Thank you. Okay. Continue, DK.
Okay, so he's banking left, banking right. He's trying to give his guys an advantage over Calloway. And at one point, he rolls the plane 140 degrees.
What the hell?
The plane is almost upside down. He says the only reason he didn't go 180 is because if he went 180 completely upside down, he wouldn't be able to have any way to orient the land around him. he had to go 140 because then he could still see out the windows where everything was. So the plane is almost upside down right now, and the crew and Calloway are literally fighting on the ceiling of the plane. They are rolling around on the ceiling of the plane. Just, God, give me that spear gun. Oh, God, get the hammer. Jesus.
All right, now we play the scene from Inception when they're in the hotel room and it's spinning.
Yeah, so that picture Shai showed earlier of the plane almost upside down, that is how that plane looked right now.
Oh my God.
Yes. So the other problem, though, is that the first officer flying the plane has no idea what's going on back there. All he can hear is the violence. All he can hear is grunts and give me the... Ah! He doesn't know if his maneuvers are helping the fight. He doesn't know if his maneuvers are actually hindering his crewmates in the fight. But he is obviously pushing this cargo plane well past its limitations. DC-10s were not built for hard banks and barrel rolls. So this is the fact that he's even able to do this stuff is in a DC-10 while he has a fractured skull is incredible.
Well, you said these are all like ex-military guys.
True,
right?
They are like ex-Navy. Yeah,
right. And he's a fighter pilot.
He was a fighter pilot. Yeah. So, but it's insane that he is pulling these maneuvers off in this big old honking DC-10.
I feel like at some point when he got hit hard enough, he's just like, all right, training takes over. This is just what I know. There's a problem here. Fly the plane, funny.
Pretty much. So in the actual fight, I think Calloway at this point is kind of on the winning end, because even though the plane is going absolutely crazy and rolling and they're fighting on the ceiling of the plane, again, the captain and flight engineer have both been hit kind of loopy. So they're doing the best they can, but as this fight goes on, it's going to get worse and worse for them, because at some point, Peterson is going to bleed out. And so Sanders, wounded, isn't going to be able to handle Calloway alone. There's just no chance he is going to 1v1 Calloway in his current state. So they're coming out of that 140 degree roll, and the first officer is like, you know what, that fight doesn't sound like it's going well. I still got to do some stuff. So he takes this big ass DC-10 out of the 140 degree turn, and he goes nosedive. And he is literally in this nosedive. He is flying the plane. I think they said it was the fastest a DC-10 has ever been flown.
Are air traffic control and stuff, are they like noticing this plane is doing this shit? And they're like, we need, like, what's going on?
I think at this point they don't know. They haven't been radioed in yet. So I don't think they've quite noticed just yet.
Okay, because it's doing.
But that is
some,
a fair question
wacky...
that you'd think that control would be like, whoa, those are weird maneuvers.
It's like, hey, look at that. There's our express airliner, and it is doing flips. All right, something's up.
Why is it barrel rolling? What the hell? But yeah, I'm shocked that, like, nuts and bolts didn't just start popping off this thing. The speed gauge is maxed out. And he recalls that the wind whooshing off the plane was so loud that he was probably going faster than the gauges could indicate. The elevators on the back of the plane are flapping around just unresponsive because they're going so fast and there's so much wind going across them. It is incredible that he didn't literally just fly this thing apart. And again, in the back, they are sliding down the ceiling. They're sliding down the side of the plane. They're like sliding back towards the cockpit. And again, poor Peterson, he is just bleeding all over the place. Like I have no idea how Peterson is conscious or fighting or anything. Let alone against a full strength ex-Navy martial arts expert.
A fully armed and uninjured assailant. Well, at this point, he could be very injured.
Yeah,
but
true.
Who knows? Who knows how many times he may have slammed into the interior of the plane?
Yeah, how many times? Just bam, bam, just tossed around like a rag doll. The pilot, the first officer, has another problem. So he has put the throttle to full power. It is full forward, obviously, because they're in this crazy dive and he just wants to do all the crazy stuff. And if he wants to pull them out of this dive, he needs to pull the throttle back into idle position, which is obviously the middle position. But he's only got one arm that's really working. And he's using that one good arm to fly the plane. So if he wants to pull out of this crazy dive that he's put them in, he needs to take his one good arm, take it off the flight control, pull the throttle idle, and pull them out of the nosedive.
Right. So he only has one good arm because of the head injury, right? Not because...
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, I remember him being whacked in the arm.
He's essentially, like, lost feeling in one of his arms. Like, he can kind of use it, but he can't really... His sense of touch is, like, gone in that arm.
Gotcha. Okay.
And he does! He does! He takes his one good arm off the thing, pulls it to idle, quickly grabs it back, and he pulls them out of the nosedive. It's insane. Again, the main takeaway of this story so far is just how amazing this crew is. Like, it's insane what they're able to do with all these... it's crazy. And as the plane kind of levels out, things are getting pretty desperate for the flight engineer and the captain that are fighting off Calloway. Flight engineer is getting weaker and weaker. He's losing more and more blood. And it's just like, oh boy, if he keeps fighting. But finally, even though the captain, Dave Sanders, is kind of loopy and he is also losing feeling in one of his arms, he manages to actually wrestle a hammer out of Calloway's hand, and he just... and he starts to beat him with it. And in the documentary I mentioned where, like, they interview him, even in all this craziness, he specifically says that at this point, look, I'm not trying to kill Calloway. You know, I want to disable him, I want to knock him out, and I want to get him under control, so I'm swinging for the fences, but I'm not trying to kill the man, which is... wild to me, because in that situation, I think my primal brain would have taken over, and I would have just started swinging until he stopped moving, and I don't know.
I would have been like Ryan Gosling in a particular elevator in a particular movie about driving. I don't know if at this point I really would have held back anything, because I don't know how I would react.
My primal brain would have taken over, and I just would have kept swinging until it was just wet paste, you know? Also, it was around this time, since they're kind of leveled out and he probably doesn't hear too much fighting, the first officer is like, okay, I finally have a minute. I can radio into Memphis Airport, let him know that, man, there's a takeover situation going on. We need an emergency vector back to Memphis. And he specifically told them, we need armed intervention when we land.
Memphis, can you hear me?
Is this Express 705 Heavy?
705, yes.
705 Heavy, Memphis, roger. I do hear you. You can proceed direct Memphis if able. Expect runway 9er. The altimeter is 302 9er.
You understand we're declaring an emergency. We need security to meet the airplane. We'll stop it on the runway or again.
Express 705 Heavy, affirmative. All that's been taken care of.
Which obviously the control tower knew meant he wanted a SWAT team ready to literally storm the plane as soon as they landed. And amazingly, for the most part, they pretty much had Calloway basically under control, you know? So much so that Dave Sanders was able to relieve his first officer and take over the duty of flying the plane back into Memphis, because I guess that's how you're supposed to handle emergency situations. The captain is the one that is supposed to, in an emergency, fly the plane back into its emergency landing. So... First Officer Tucker is relieved, and he starts you know, taken over the flight duty, and the first officer starts helping Peterson restrain Calloway, who is kind of sort of under control, but he's still putting up a struggle. Peterson still is just a bloody freaking mess. Still, no idea how he's conscious. That is incredible how much this guy is doing with a severed temporal artery. But they're, you know, they're trying to restrain Calloway. But Captain Sanders has a kind of similar problem to the first officer. Like we said, he's losing his sense of touch. It's leaving him, and one of his sides is kind of starting to go numb. And he has his emergency vector back to Memphis is going to be one hell of a trick. Because not only are they going way too fast, they are also coming in way too heavy because they still have a majority of their unspent fuel on board. So this is going to be...
I never thought about that. The concept of like too much fuel that you should have burned.
Mm-hmm. So that's
wild.
That's a big problem. Now, there is a way to start like an emergency dump of the fuel, but like it's at the flight engineer station. And there's no way he can perform the fuel dump and fly the plane at the same time. Also, Calloway has seemingly started to get a second wind, and he's kicking up a fight again. And apparently, the captain said it sounded so violent, and it sounded like it was getting so bad that he was like, you know what? I am going to let my primal sense take over. I'm going to get up. I'm going to put the autoplane on for a second. I'm going to go back there, and I'm going to kill that man.
You know, I appreciate his honesty, because I feel like, you know what? Like, yeah. At this point, yeah.
Yeah, he was like, the only way we are going to safely land this plane is if I go back there and I kill that man. But before he could do any of that, Tucker and Peterson managed to get him under control again. I think specifically Tucker managed to hold him down. Peterson managed to get one of his hammers, and he just bludgeons Calloway with it as hard as he can with like the last of his strength. And they finally get Calloway kind of under control again, and he's kind of like handleable.
Well, and, I mean, much like Calloway did to them, you get hit hard enough in the head, you're not really doing much.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he did hit them in the head, and look at what they're doing. This crew is insane.
Calloway, Calloway is no slouch in this situation either. I'll give him some credit. But boy, did he
underestimate the crew.
He chose the wrong fucking pilots.
He chose the wrong three dudes to mess with for sure.
He's like, of all of the goddamn FedEx airliners I had to rob / hijack, I chose
he picks the three Rambo.
I chose the Bruce Willis New York one. God damn it.
And you might be thinking, hooray, they have him under control. Everything is cool again. Well, not really, because the plane, like we said, is still coming in too heavy, too fast. So here's essentially the insane maneuvers that Captain Sanders has to make in this big-ass DC-10. To get to the runway, he needs to make an immediate 90-degree turn. He needs to fly parallel to the runway for a bit and then do a 180 to be able to even approach the runway. So, aside from all that, he was struck with a hammer, losing sensation and feeling in one of his arms and hands. Again, DC-10 completely overloaded. DC-10 not meant to pull sudden 90-degree and 180 bank turns, even in optimal conditions. So, he has a bit of a struggle in front of him with all of this stuff completely going against him. And amazingly, he pulls it off perfectly. He pulls it off so smooth, you would think a DC-10 was actually built to do that. Like, when he lands, not even a single landing gear tire was blown out. It's amazing. Like, that is damn near miracle status, with everything stacked against them, with the head trauma, with the bleeding, with the injury, with the stress, with the DC-10, with the fuel, with the overload. He lands it perfect.
This is absolutely ridiculous.
It is so crazy. So they land and they pop the emergency door, which unfortunately the SWAT team couldn't storm it because, like, you know when you pop the emergency door and that big yellow, like, raft ramp pops out? It makes it really easy for people to get out of the plane, but apparently storming up that thing is a real pain in the ass. So they couldn't storm in there because of that inflatable ramp, and they had to, like, get a ladder so that medics could actually, like, get up there and treat the crew and everything. The first guy that got up there was a medic, and they're like, hey, toss me up a pair of handcuffs so I can, like, cuff Calloway, because he's starting to struggle again. He's starting to kick up a bit of a fuss again. So they cuff him, they restrain him. But when that medic gets inside that plane, there is blood everywhere. It's on the ceiling. It's on the side of the plane. It's all over the floor. It looks like unholy hell was unleashed on the inside of this plane.
I'm assuming it's also the blood of every... Holy shit.
Yeah, that's what his card looked like after the fight. That's the captain. The one that has the bandage around his head. That's the captain.
My friend, there are two people with bandages around their heads. I'm assuming the guy standing
one walking.
Up.
Yeah, yes, he, yes. Yeah, yeah. Andy Peterson,
God.
The flight engineer, is barely conscious at this point because of the blood loss. Not entirely sure how he survived this, but he did. And he was obviously the first one attended to and taken off the plane because he was in bad shape. The first officer, Jim Tucker, was not doing great either because he had this insane skull fracture. Like I said, bone shards are stuck in his brain. Shy, I don't know if you have that picture from the documentary, but he's like, oh, yeah, you know, when I went in for my CAT scan, they made a recreation of what my skull cap looked like afterwards. And essentially, he had a fist-sized hole in his skull.
Oh, my God.
It is. There it is. She has it. Look at that. That's what his skull cap looked like.
You know, there are, like, lessons to be learned where it's like, hey, you know, sometimes you can do everything right and still fail.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm thinking of Calloway here. And I don't think he did much wrong.
Yeah, he just picked the wrong dudes to mess with.
Oh, sorry. What's wrong? As in, like, logistically, not morally. Yeah. He's not a good guy.
Planning wise, you know, yeah, pretty
yeah,
much.
Like, he absolutely did it all right, and he just chose the wrong dudes.
He chose the wrong MFers to mess with. The captain, Dave Sanders, had to have his ear stitched back on properly. He had a lot of deep gashes on his head, but as you can see, with a little assistance, he was actually able to walk away from this, which is crazy. I think Tucker also, because of the brain trauma, I think he had to relearn, like, how to walk, how to talk. Like, he was, oof. So, yeah, they survived. They walk away. They survived. And Calloway also taken to the hospital, but he was obviously handcuffed, restrained to his stretcher, and all that stuff. So, that was the absolute insanity of Flight 705. And just, again, I cannot reiterate how incredible this crew was for being able to safeguard themselves and the plane from Auburn Calloway's attempt to take it over.
But, right. So did we find out his motives?
Ah, yes. I was about to go into that. I was about to, okay. Dean Kamen. Yeah. But what we still don't know is why Auburn Calloway decided to do all of this. And what exactly is he hoping to achieve by taking over just like a Federal Express cargo thing?
And attempted murder.
And attempted murder.
There's so, one thing of being like having a gun and like being like, hey, land this plane X or Y, as opposed to, yeah, okay.
So what we know about Auburn Calloway is that he was dealing with a failed marriage. Now, it wasn't like he was angry with his wife or anything. He was actually still doing whatever he could to support his ex-wife and their two children. Still love them, still live for them. But things aren't going super well for him, because I think it was either the day before or the day after the attempted hijacking, he was to be summoned to the Federal Express headquarters about falsifying his flying hours, like how many he had as experience before they hired him, which is obviously a big no-no. So in Auburn Calloway's mind, like, they're about to fire him. And he's about to lose the only way he's got to support this family that, even though, you know, they are not together anymore, he still lives for his wife, he still lives for his kids, he still loves them a lot. But they find this note that he left behind. I think it was in his belongings or in the, maybe it was in his room or in his guitar case, I forget which one. But it was a letter that specifically said, like, yo, you know, I still just, you know, I live for my wife and kids. You know, I'm always trying to secure enough money to make sure the kids can go to college in Stanford, I believe. And, you know, just stuff like that, you know. But the big thing they find in this letter is that he kind of hinted that he would rather die at a place and date of his choosing rather than live a life where he could not provide for his family. And
he's not going to get either of those.
So before the flight, he also transfers every disposable asset he can to his ex-wife, which is around $54,000, and he leaves his last will and testament, which is, you know, he leaves everything to his wife and kids, and he leaves that easily found. I think it's just sitting literally right on top of his bed or on top of his bedstand. So Auburn Calloway had decided that what he's going to do is hijack this plane and intentionally crash it, killing himself and the crew, in order to make it appear as if it was a work-related accident so that his family could collect on his $2.5 million life insurance policy.
Okay, that took a turn.
A little bit of a turn. And the reason he chose the weapons that he did was because in the wreckage of the plane, it would have been almost impossible to tell that those things had been used to assault the crew. There was an FBI investigator that literally said, had they found all those things in the wreckage, there would have been no way that they could have tied that to a hijacking and tied those items to an assault on the crew. It would have just looked like, you know, they suffered a plane crash. You know, if they found the bodies, you can't really discern a hammer blow from, well, just the trauma of a plane crash.
Yeah, like, that's a good point. Death from blunt force trauma would be much more in line with dying from a plane crash as opposed to, you know, a bullet wound.
Yeah, and the bullet wound leaves residual marks of a bullet wound. It leaves all this other stuff, and so
they might find a gun on the. They might find the wreckage of a gun. You know,
very easy to be like, oh yeah, you know, obviously he was shot. But if they find spear gun and some hammers and a guitar carry-on, you don't really think.
Yeah, it's a bit different.
Like, yeah. And the issue with the cockpit voice recorder we talked about earlier, that was Calloway slinking into the cockpit alone to make sure that it wasn't recording. Though it has been noted that if Calloway had successfully taken over the plane, all he would have had to do was fly the plane for another 30 minutes, a new recording starts and kind of erases the old one, and, you know, it's not really a big deal that Andy Peterson noticed it and flipped it back on. It's not like something he couldn't recover from. I also saw in that documentary that initially this flight was supposed to have Calloway on the crew. Initially, he was supposed to be the flight engineer, and I think it was only going to be a two-person crew, like him, the pilot, and maybe a co-pilot. So it would have been so much easier for Calloway to handle a two-person crew rather than, you know, the three-crew Rambo that he ended up getting.
That's a good point. He didn't necessarily realize that kind of level, I guess.
Yeah.
Or like two people is still a hard thing to do, but he could have gotten away with two.
Yeah, with two. He probably could have gotten away with it.
He almost got away with three.
Yeah, almost. But the reason that didn't happen was that Calloway's crew had like just barely gone over their allotted flight hours for the week, so they had to be replaced. The documentary said he went over it by like a minute, but I have a hard time believing they'd replace a crew over 1 minute. I don't know if that's true, but that's what the documentary said anyway. But Calloway was like dead set that this was the time. This is the place. This is when I'm going out. I will accept no substitutes. I'll just deadhead that flight anyway. And on August 11th, 1995, Calloway was sentenced to two consecutive life sentences for attempted air piracy and interference with flight crew.
And attempted murder?
No attempted murder, actually.
I guess maybe he was just trying to knock him out and not.
Yeah, like, I guess. Yeah.
Okay.
And because those are federal charges, you get no possibility for parole.
You get nothing. Good day, sir.
Yep, you do not pass go. You do not collect $500.
You stole fizzy lifting drinks. Look what they did to the plane.
Yeah. He tried pleading temporary insanity, but with all the obvious planning he had to do for it, the notes they found, and all the evidence clearly pointed that he must have been somewhat of sound mind to plan and enact this, the jury didn't believe it.
Yeah, nah. He was really hoping for that kind of thing, and it wasn't happening.
Yep. Though the interference with flight crew charge was vacated, and I'm not entirely sure that Shai, do you know why that was vacated? Because there's like this big legalese document you can read about it, and I'm not great with legalese, but it kind of sounded like, well, you're going to get two consecutive life sentences regardless. So the lesser charge is interference with the flight crew. The big charge is air piracy. So whatever, we'll just vacate that last charge. But I'm not super sure about that. I just know that the interference with flight crew was actually vacated. And although none of the flight crew were ever able to be physically cleared to fly again after the insane injuries that they sustained, they were all awarded with the gold medal for heroism, which is the absolute highest honor a civilian pilot can earn.
Yeah, no shit.
Yeah, they definitely deserve the highest award and the highest praise available for just, yeah.
Yeah, that's absolutely wild. I don't really know how else to describe that. It is genuinely absolutely wild. And also clearly, clearly, like, I don't know, like how do you handle that in any other situation?
Yeah, Shai said, DK, the court paper literally says, finally, we note that a reversal of the conviction would make little practical difference in any event. Okay, so that's kind of what I thought. Like, it's two life sentences regardless. You know, you're still getting air piracy no matter what. So, yeah, sure, we'll nuke that last charge, but it doesn't matter. You're still getting two life convictions. Yeah. Who cares?
You get it. You're getting life.
Cool. Just making sure I understood it right, because there was, like, a bunch of, like, legalese before that, and I wasn't sure if I was, you know, because I'm a little slow, you know.
That is a serious, like, crime doesn't pay situation. Like, not only did it not work for him, but like it got literally the exact opposite of what he wanted to get done. His family gets no money. He doesn't get to die. He gets to rot in jail forever.
Yep.
Like, god damn. And clearly
he's still rotting in jail too.
Well, clearly that photo above, he is like that is a crying man.
See, I think that's him on the way to trial, and I'm not sure if he's trying to like yuck it up for like, oh, look, I'm insane. See, look at me. I'm clearly out of my mind. Whoa, you know?
Oh, I don't know. I think he's genuinely just like, I don't, he, that looks like actual, like real good tears right there. He knows he's done.
He's cooked. He's spending the rest of his life in jail. Yep.
Yeah. So, I mean, I would, you know, I'd probably also be a little crying there myself.
Yeah, probably. But hey, this is you reap what you sow.
You do. This is as interesting as his reasoning was, and while his reasonings seemed selfless and stuff, he still attempted to murder three other individuals.
Yep, he sure did. And
it's not just about like all the self sacrifice for his family. It's like no. He was going to drive that plane into the fucking floor and murder three people.
Yep. So, and they're not sure where exactly he would have flown that plane into either. Because the best source I had was this documentary Shy gave me, and that was pretty much my main source, because like they literally interviewed the flight crew, and the flight crew was just like, oh yeah, here's what happened, here's an FBI investigator to corroborate what they're saying. And they were like, yeah, he might have actually thought about flying that thing into the Federal Express HQ, because, you know, kind of ha 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 ha. So they're not entirely sure, but it was like, yeah, it could have been like a pseudo 9/11 event where he just rammed that thing into the Federal Express HQ and just, you know. And yet they're all of those people fairly recently. All of them survived. Andy? All of them are doing well.
Oh, you know? Okay. I gotta give a shout out for my boy Dave Sanders with that mustache.
Hell yeah,
that,
brother.
That haircut. Look at that.
Hell
look at that.
Yeah, brother.
Oh, Dave Sanders still has a FedEx plane behind him.
Yeah, he does.
Sculpture.
He does. He does. Yeah, none of them were ever able to fly again because of their injuries, though.
That's
obviously
fine, dude.
I am just happy they all survived, because I was shocked that as I was reading up on this, I was shocked that they all survived. I was shocked that they were, you know, able to interview all of them. I was just like, surely one of them, because of those crazy injuries, had to have, but they're all still kicking, and good for them. I wish them nothing but happiness and a long life, because wow, what a thing to have to endure. But what a bunch of chads. What?
Yeah.
Like, that is, whew, I could never. I would have crumpled like a wet tissue paper.
That is genuinely shocking stuff right there. I did not expect it to be at that level of, yeah. I don't know. Most of these end poorly, and this only ended poorly for one person.
Yep.
And, you know.
It ended with three heroes being born. Well, I guess they already were, but yeah.
Rip Bozo.
Rip Bozo, get wrecked.
Mm-hmm.
Whew. So that's it. That's Flight 705. How you doing?
That's wild.
It's crazy.
That's actually wild.
It's insane.
There's a lot of twists and turns there in general, but also just...
Also the plane, right, was twisting and turning.
Speaking of, the plane was very much twisting and turning.
Masterful piloting on every level.
Masterful piloting, masterful fighting.
Mm-hmm. With a severed artery.
And a hole in your head.
And a fist-sized hole in your head. It's crazy. Sheesh.
Yeah, that's good. That's pretty damn impressive. I'm genuinely surprised by that whole thing.
Genuinely surprised, genuinely so impressed.
Yeah. Good on those folks. God
hell
damn.
Yeah. Good on them. Whew.
All right.
Take us home, country road.
I mean, God, I mean, how do you end this one, you know? Like, I kind of want Shy to, like, make the ending bit of the podcast is just the screen, but it starts, like, rotating at a massive speed because, like...
barrel rolls, yeah.
The plane. We're going... Oh.
See you next time.
Shit.
Wow, really?
Wait, when you think about it, though, in the back, when they were all fighting and he was twisting the plane, it was just never ending.
Yeah, there probably was actually quite a bit. Yeah, all right, fine. Yep, all right. All right, see you next time.
See you next time.